Hello and welcome to Canoes History Gems with me, Greg Chapman.
And me, Jem Deducci.
And Jem, we are going to be having a little bit of a discussion this week about sauces, because, you know, obviously...
I love a good gravy sauce. I love a good garlic sauce.
Well, not quite that kind of sauce, I'm afraid.
No.
We're going for the actual, how do we know stuff about history? And I think that this is a topic...
Have you eaten, by the way, Greg? That's also an important thing to know.
I haven't eaten, which is why I'm amazed you're the first one to leap in with the sauces joke, actually. But as a general rule, this is something that is, these days, taught very, very well in school, especially if you take history at GCSE level. I think the vast majority of that course these days is less about learning dates and learning that, you know, this battle took place on this day and this battle took place on this day, and more about getting to grips with how we know things and getting to grips with sources. So I think that this is something that, when you learn history in school, has become more and more important. And yet, the funny thing about it, and the reason why I think a discussion about sources is important in this particular day and time, is people seem to struggle in general with the ability to take that simple lesson we're learning from history about checking your sources, knowing your sources, what are the problems with different sources, and saying, oh, should we apply this same set of rules and regulations to, for example, what I just read on the internet or what I've just read in a newspaper? These are easily transferable skills from history, and it's one of the important things from history. That whole thing of those who know no history are doomed to repeat it. Well, there's an argument to, you know, sort of be made either way on that. But certainly those people who study histories and really take on board how you should learn and how you should back up evidence, how everything should be evidence-based and things like that, that is a very, very important skill, a very useful skill to have in the modern world. So, leaving that little bit of philosophy, did you have anything you want to say to introduce it before we actually start picking apart some sources?
I'll go on to that momentarily, but you mentioned GCSE, and I remember being at school and how it is taught about, look, read this source. Do you think this source is biased or not? Also, what does this sentence mean? So, and that's a really important skill to just disseminate things. However, this was sort of news to me. Greg, could you give me the score, the grade you got in any of your GCSEs? Just pick one and tell me what grade you got.
What I can tell you, Jem, is I can tell you that I got 7 A's, 3 B's and a C. I cannot tell you which subject each one of those individual grades came from.
Okay, but my point is, you've just assessed yourself with letters. We all know that if you get an A in a subject, that's really good. Yeah?
Yep.
Here's the thing. They're just changing it all to numbers. And there are 10 numbers. Apparently, a number one is something like an A star star. So actually, an A is a 3. And a B, it's insane. Because, you know, look, should you be scoring them in numbers or letters? That is an arbitrary choice, but it's an arbitrary choice that was made 40, 50 years ago, so that, you know, right now it's a sort of, it sounds a little bit annoying, but think about recruiters in a couple of years' time, that everybody they're hiring have been like A's, B's and C's, and then suddenly there are these graduates coming through with, oh, I see you got a 4 in English. Is that good, bad, average? I don't know. And you know, people are now going to have to relearn this system. It does seem a little bit stupid to me. But anyway, so yes, going back to it, I think that if we remember our time in school in English or history, looking at sources or looking at how a thing was written and making a judgment call on its veracity, or indeed was it a contemporary source or you know, a later source, yeah, that was a skill that you picked up in school. And you're quite right. It does seem to me that either these people skip those bits in school or are bedazzled by the internet, and we are now in a slightly more dangerous area. But look, even sources from ye olde times weren't always accurate either.
That's true, but there's also the other thing of sheer quantity. You would think that we would know more about, for example, World War One, than we would know about, I don't know, the Hundred Years' War, for example. And I know those are two Yes. completely incomparable things, because we've got so many more sources. The trouble with that
Well, wait,
is...
you say that. I'm just going to have to throw this point in. We have all heard of the Somme, the Battle of the Somme, 1916, sort of slogging through the mud and things like that. It's worth remembering that the Battle of Agincourt, part of the Hundred Years' War, was also slogging through mud, and the nearest river was this river called the Somme. A little fact there for you.
And the thing is, we've got so many different sources and variant sources. Now, when we look at the Hundred Years' War, yes, we're going to be fairly short on sources, but that means we can take those sources and we can study all of them, and we can have a really good look and a close focus at all the sources we've got. When we get up to the First World War, suddenly we have this huge decision about exactly what sources we decide to focus on. And I was listening to this podcast the other day, actually, that was talking about it was some nonsense about how we have to study poems in school to learn about World War One, and how that's not as important as it could be. What was that podcast called? Neon, that's the one. You were talking about this, I know, on Neon the other day, about the fact, you know, we tend to focus on poetry when we learn about World War One, and that distorts our view of the First World War. And that's because suddenly we've been selective about what particular area, and even more than that, we are very selective about what poems. You know, there's maybe half a dozen or so famous poems that students are taught in school from which they get an awful lot of information about World War One, you know. And when we start to pick and choose which sources we're going to use, that seems far more dangerous than looking back further in the past when we say, well, look, we've only got two people writing about this particular event, and then we've got the archaeology. What can we do with those things put together? But let's look at every single piece, as opposed to now where it's like, right, we don't have time. Nobody has a time in their life to look at every single piece of evidence, every single source about World War One, and try and come up with an overarching conclusion. So anybody who is writing about anything more recent is by necessity being selective, really selective, about what sources they're going to take the time to look at. And if you have a particular idea or a particular point, the danger then is when you've got a lot of sources, you can go looking just for those sources that are going to back up your point of view, and you're going to continue to build on this historical myth, as opposed to, as I say, we go back a few hundred years, you've got two people writing about this, that gets far more difficult.
Well, I think that historical bias has always been there. One of my favourite ones, I mean, this isn't particularly early, but you've got Charlemagne, which means literally Charles the Great. Huge debate in the 19th century about, because basically he ruled France and Germany and northern Italy round about the year 800. And so there was a debate in the 19th century, was he French or was he German? The reality, of course, is those things wouldn't have meant anything to Charlemagne. He was just the Frankish emperor. But the point is this. In the year 800, I've always loved this fact. He got crowned emperor on Christmas Day 800. And he chose that because he knew it would be an easy date for people to remember in history like that. However, in the chronicle about his life, it says specifically that he was crowned in Rome. Had he known as he entered St. Peter's that he would be crowned emperor, he would not have gone. That is what it says in the chronicle, and yet every historian who studied this area has come to the conclusion it means the opposite. Now that's some pretty heavy lifting in terms of logic to say somebody wrote down black and your answer is white, but there is actually a good reason for this. The whole thing is written in the same formula as some of the Stoic literature about the Roman emperors, and he was always trying to emulate kind of Roman imperial thought and power. He's kind of resurrecting the Roman Empire in the West. And so therefore this idea of this sort of, oh no, I'm not worthy, plays really well to that kind of narrative, but that's not what happened. And it does show you that just because it's written down one way isn't enough. You have to look around it. And the problem with the Middle Ages is sometimes you get one chronicle telling you what happened. And so we don't know what else, you know, if they didn't, you know, the Anglo-Saxon chronicle, particularly during the Viking times, like there was a vicious battle around Baden or whatever, and Otford, and there was massive violence between the two sides, and at the end, the Saxon horde left the field in good order. It's like, well, does that mean it's an Anglo-Saxon defeat, or does it mean that they genuinely retreated to fight another day, or is it just made up and they just panicked and ran, or is it written with a slight bias towards the Vikings? Whatever, there are so many different things, and the thing is, though, you got two lines, and you can't get any more out of those two lines, really. It becomes very, very difficult, as you say. The further back you go in history, people say, oh, history started in places like, or written language started in ancient Babylon. That's true, but the first few hundred years, it was just lists of, like, how much grain do we have? That doesn't tell you an awful lot. And then finally, when we get to stuff that's vaguely historical, like lists of kings and what they do, we got gaps, and there's no way to fill them in, and we don't know how biased they are. And if you got one line about an entire king's rule, that's not very helpful, other than the fact that he existed. That's all you can really say.
That's right. And when we get this thing where we've only got one side of an argument, there's the old phrase, history is written by the winners, and there's a certain...
Which I hate, by the way.
But there's a certain argument to that. Now, you notice any time I say one of these phrases, I do it in my very silly, this is a historical phrase, oh, let's all remember this, because, like a lot of things like that, there is a grain of truth if you look at them at the very most basic level, and then when you start to look a little bit deeper, that's not true at all. But one of the things I think about that is when we look at something like the Roman invasion of Britain, and a lot of our sources for the Roman invasion of Britain are based on Roman sources. That's a lot of what we know, the Roman sources. We don't have, sort of Boudicca writing her own thing about what happened to Boudicca, for example. And we have, and I forget, to my shame, whether it's Tacitus or Cassius Dio, one of the two wrote this fantastic account of Boudicca's rebellion, including the speech written by Boudicca.
I'm pretty sure that's Cassius. And of course, he wasn't contemporary. He may have been Roman, but he was writing it like about 80, 90 years later, wasn't he?
Exactly, and he's writing it later, and he writes the speech of Boudicca. And obviously, as a historian today, if you sat down writing a serious history book and you wrote out a speech that there is no possible way you could have known the content of, and you put it in a history book, you would be, strung up. You would be completely rejected as a serious historian because you're making stuff up. Now, there are, sort of other books that attempt to do that, that admit they're doing it, drift into fiction. That's another thing entirely. But the problem is that when we've got this, a lot of people will take that and they use his works as evidence of, oh, look, this is what happened to Boudicca. This is the story of Boudicca. Now, any source actually has a certain level of usefulness. And what's really interesting for me about that particular source and that particular speech is the way that Boudicca's speech attacks the Romans. It says how the British would feel. And when you read it, it does feel very realistic, like the sort of thing she would have said. Like, it is expressing real grievances. It is really pointing out what is wrong with the Roman Empire, what the problems are, how they are bad. What's really interesting to me about that is the fact that he couldn't have known what Boudicca said, but it was possible for somebody 80 years later within the Roman Empire, one, to sit down, look at the Roman Empire and think, right, this is what someone would have said. These are the things that we were doing wrong. These are the things we are doing wrong. This is the problem. And they managed to write that down as well, and that writing has stayed recorded. This is someone who is, albeit giving the words to somebody else, but in history, he is very clearly making a case against the Roman Empire. And so that source, although we can sort of reject it as a source of what Boudicca actually said, we can take that source as a source of the time that it's written. And so it's really important that we remember when we're looking at historical sources, even though it might be a history written about another time, the source can actually be a really good source of history for the time it's written and the person it's written by, rather than what it was actually written about.
I couldn't agree more. And it's sort of similar idea. It's always interesting looking at things like Renaissance paintings of somebody from the Middle Ages or somebody from the Roman era, and they're invariably wearing very late Renaissance plate armor. And it's a beautiful, you know, if you want to know what armor looked like in 1500, that is, you know, that's what it's showing you. And therefore, it's a really good source for, let's say, armor from 1500. It's just Julius Caesar never looked like that. But they didn't know that at the time. So, you know, and you do get these evolutions. Another sort of Roman emperor is Constantine. Now, you know, I don't know how much the listeners or you right now are thinking about Constantine, but he was the one who made the Roman Empire Christian. And this moment was very much picked up by the Middle Ages chroniclers, and you know, he was seen as this kind of great forward thinker. This, you know, almost I'm sticking my neck out here. He's probably a saint in the Greek Orthodox Church. But here's the thing: he was pagan until he was at his deathbed. He changed the religion of the empire, but he himself remained pagan until he was dying, and then he asked to be baptized. So, you know, there's literally, I've seen it, there's this medieval image of him clearly in sort of rude health being baptized in sort of a large barrel of holy water, you know, and with a big religious procession around him. That never happened. But the distant echo memory of he was the Roman emperor who made the Roman Empire Christian gets turned into him being this incredibly spiritual, religious Christian man, which never happened. But because nowadays we're able to see what actually happened, we can see the sort of evolution of the era getting bigger and bigger and bigger as we go along through time. And you know, that's clearly been rewritten with something, or accelerated, or a catalyst with something like the internet now. And, you know, look, Greg, you and I have both had this same sort of conversation online. Why should I believe anything written online? That's a good point. But there is well-written stuff online. But that isn't the same thing as everything on the internet is well-written and unbiased and they check the sources.
And whatever you do, this is always my thing, is we say this on the podcast quite regularly. We will be wrong about stuff, not because we've not checked our sources, not necessarily because of anything else, but just because a new source will come up, something that we've said will have changed. We will have made a mistake. We'll have looked somewhere. We'll have looked at one source and there'll be another contradictory source that we haven't seen. And that's why we always encourage people, both on here, and I know you do it on Neon as well, encourage people to give us a shout out on Twitter. Let us know what mistakes we've made. Let us know if you have a differing opinion to what we've ended up with. And that is really important, having the alternative sources. And this is the thing with sort of news at the moment, is you can get that. We all know that everything's happening with Spicer over in America at the moment, where he posted that fantastic thing right at the beginning of Trump's presidency, saying about, oh, look, we have more people at the inauguration than Barack Obama did. And it took about 5 seconds for someone just to Google a photograph of each one of the inaugurations, put them up online and say, well, no, clearly that isn't true. Now,
and then there was an argument about, was that manipulated? And it's like, look, you're the press secretary for the president. You have bigger things to worry about, like the economy, like the relationship with Iran, like, you know, all kinds of things, the environment and, you know, law. We should not be spending days and days arguing about whether a photo of crowds is or isn't real. You know, if you're having that argument, you've already lost your integrity, as it were. So, and look, the other thing that's worth pointing out on what you've just said there is, we agree on, and we've clearly done some research around the topics that we talk about, but this is a chat between Greg and Jem, and it means that sometimes, and again, this has happened to me on the other podcast as well, you know, there are times when you meant to say one thing, and then when you listen back, you go, oh, I got that wrong. You know, I misspoke is a phrase that sort of came out with Hillary Clinton when she was describing turning up in Serbia under sniper fire. And then they rolled the tape back again. You can check this stuff. It's like, no, she wasn't. She was greeted by a flower girl. There was clearly no threat. Now, that was just made up, but she used the term misspoke. But I think misspoke is better when it's, you know, in the moment when you're just having a chat, like here and there. And I might misappropriate a quote. Like earlier on, I said, I'm pretty sure that's Cassius Dio. I may be wrong. And you yourself were going, you know, it could be Tacitus, it could be, you know. So right now, if people just listen to this podcast, it was definitely Cassius Dio who did it. But you might want to check and see, did Jem remember right? Because Jem's memory, sadly, is not 100% accurate.
That's right. And like you say, it's a chat. We are not sitting here with, I mean, I have a couple of computer systems around me. The reason I have the computer around me is, one, because I'm monitoring what's going on the podcast. Two, especially when we get into the argument episodes, if you suddenly bring up a character that you want to make an argument for, or your side of the argument, I know full well that when we do one of our argument episodes, we are being deliberately biased. And on our argument episodes, I know that, you know, if you've come in to make one particular argument, you've deliberately picked out facts that are going to make your argument. And because we don't discuss this in advance, we haven't had time to prepare and go in, and you tend to go for some slightly obscure areas of history. And so I will, on those occasions, very quickly Google to try and find out what your bias is and how I shoot you down. And on those argument episodes, we make it very, very clear what our bias is. And that is a fantastic way to do history, is we can't avoid bias. It's really, really difficult to actually avoid bias in anything. We are all only human. And so if you can actually come out and say, look, this is where my bias lies, this is what my bias is in this particular situation, this is where you should be careful and watch out, then that makes a huge amount of difference. But just going back to the Spicer thing just for a second, because it does touch on history. Imagine that this isn't happening in today's times, but it's happening 300-400 years ago, before we have photography. Let's take photography out of the question. And then suddenly we've got somebody saying this was the largest inauguration in history. And if that's the source that then survives, and that's the one that gets passed down, we end up with the view of, wow, this guy must have been amazing. He must have been so popular. We've got sources here that say this was the biggest inauguration of history. And that's the problem, the flip side of the problem I was saying earlier about having a lot of sources for today. The flip side of that is, the further back you go, the more likely we are to have lost any correction, any argument to any one particular statement.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, nowadays, you know, you've got this thing like fake news. And it's basically because, well, it's now used as a weapon, but you can prove whether certain things were true or not. It's like last night I actually saw a debate on CNN where this basically this businessman was saying, when was the last time America had 4% growth? Because basically it was saying that America's currently under Trump got 3% growth of the economy, and it's tracking on to 4%. Isn't Donald Trump doing an amazing, the implication was Trump's done better than any recent president. And the CNN reporter just instantly fired back, went, five times, you know, when was the last time you heard of that? And the response was, five times under Barack Obama. In other words, she was anticipating that as a statement, and therefore shot it down. But if she hadn't have done that research, people would have sat there and gone, oh yeah, yeah, he's brilliant with the economy. And as a businessman, you'd hope he would be brilliant with the economy. But it does show you that this is the thing. Nowadays, there's these things called echo chambers. You might go onto a website or listen to a podcast or whatever it may be that agrees with your points of view. That's an echo chamber. But just because you like the sound of it doesn't make it true. That's left wing, right wing, you know, you're a fan of Napoleonic history, you hate Napoleon, whatever it may be. The point is, you know, just because it sounds true doesn't mean it is true. Just because it fits with your worldview doesn't mean it is the way the world works. You know, it doesn't matter which side. There are scary, biased people on all sides. And what I guess this sort of finishes off it with, you know, I guess this is the wrap up, as it were. You know, this is my plea and your plea probably as well, saying, look, do the research yourself. This podcast is designed to entertain. We're trying not to be biased, but mistakes will happen. And if you're ever sitting there going, I'd like to know a little bit more, really, that's one of the points of this podcast. Do find out more. And Wikipedia gets a bad rap. If you want to go onto Wikipedia into something that could well be contentious, like, let's say, George W. Bush, I went onto that years ago when I was looking up some information, and I noticed it was changing all the time, and there were some very biased opinions that the next day I went onto the Wikipedia page are being taken down. So clearly that's an area which you got to be careful. But then I also remember wanting to check the dates of Baldwin V, Prince of Antioch. King of Jerusalem, I should say. Funnily enough, Baldwin V isn't a hot topic in the world today. And it was clearly written by a historian, and there was nothing controversial there. And yeah, so that would be a classic example of, you know, the internet has bits which are very contentious, and it should almost have like a red siren flashing off of the top of them. Other places are a bit more calm and academic. I'm done.
And the only other thing I'm going to say is this is my internet source checking plea, because obviously now we've got an awful lot of sources and we have all this stuff going on over the internet, and you get this stuff popping up on your timeline. The other advantage of the internet is it's made it a whole lot easier to check what you're posting. It's so often I get things posted to me on Facebook, reposted, and my tradition now is just as soon as I see something like that and someone's deliberately posted me in it, I go to Snopes, find the other side of the argument, and I just post them a link so they can go and look it up themselves, see this whole source-based rebuttal of whatever they put. And it's so easy now to get a piece of information and go on the internet and try and find out where that originated. And sometimes you can find it and sometimes you can't. But it's always worth double-checking any source you've got, see how far back you can trace the information and see where it's come from. So, with all of that in mind, Jem, have you got something you would like to plug for us today?
Well, I think because it's been mentioned a few times, it's worth saying, hey, I've got another podcast called Neon, where basically I take a piece of pop culture and, you know, offline, Greg and I have been talking about this. And so it might be a piece of pop culture you know nothing about. But as Greg was saying, oh, actually, I thought I'd find those boring. But look, that's the starting point. And then I get into history. If you like the way I talk about history, it doesn't really matter which bit of pop culture it is. And as you hear me wistfully talking about the good old days of, I don't know, the original Assassin's Creed or the original Star Wars or something like that, maybe you can relate to one of those, maybe you can't. But then I very quickly go into, here's an interesting fact, and ooh, this was in the video game or TV series or movie or whatever, and it might make you look at this thing in a slightly different way in the future.
And just to add on to that, one of the things I did say to Jem offline was, I said, you touched on Warhammer in one of your episodes. You did a little bit about it. Can you do an episode of Neon about the history of Warhammer? Because I know quite a bit about history. I know absolutely nothing about Warhammer, and people talk about it, and I like to learn about things that are outside of my personal sphere of experience. Because I know history, if history is a way in for me to find out about, like you say, video games, I don't play video games. I'm finding out a lot about video games through the history, rather than, I think, as your original intention was, finding out about history through the video games. I kind of look at these slightly different way. That's not to say there's not a lot of history in them that I didn't know before. But that's Jem's plug, so do check out Neon Podcast. And remember, when you check it out, do leave a review, a 5-star rating on whatever podcast app you're listening to it on, like you can do for this podcast as well. I'm going to do a quick plug for The Last Airship. If you just go to www.thelastairship.com, watch our 6-part web series, and we've got more videos of that coming out soon. Best way to keep up to date on those is to like The Last Airship on Facebook and get all of the news. That is all we've got time for this week, however. So I think I want to just say a massive thank you to my wonderful co-host, Mr. Jem Deducci.
And I'd like to say a very biased thank you to my wonderful co-host, Greg Chapman.
And we would like to thank all of you for listening to us. Do check our sources. Do let us know on Twitter at @JemDeducci or @ConsensHistories. If you've got anything you disagree with any of these podcasts, any facts that you think we need to correct, we do like to hear from you. But for now, thank you all so much for listening. Goodbye and take care.